to review our work plan and to introduce members today. I would like, at this time, our committee administrator, Mr. Pacobian, to briefly review the rules with us. Any comments, members, after that time, I would entertain that.
Thank you, Senator. Just real briefly, these are Senate committee rules that you might have seen in other committees. Basically, it just says that majority members are required to constitute a quorum for the committee. These rules are based on Mason's Manual of Legislative Procedures and basically must be a public meeting. The chair can call a subcommittee. However, the subcommittee must defer back to the full committee for any kind of decision-making. Measures can be pre-session filed. And then the meeting can be adjourned or recessed by the chair or upon an affirmative quorum of the members. And this is a five-member committee, so it would be three members. Thank you, Chair.
Questions, comments? If not, I'd entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move we adopt these rules dated January 23rd, 2006.
I simply move that the rules dated January 23rd, 2006 be adopted. To all in favor? One of the things that has that I have pondered over the years, and that is after talking with the President of the Senate regarding some of the concerns that I had about this department, is that sometimes those persons that have come in the legislative process, I'm talking about our members now, legislators, don't realize the what I call the ups and downs and the many changes that have taken place with this department over the years. And so therefore it's easy to form some kind of opinion about who can do the job best, or I can do the job better than you, or even sometimes our people thinking that the program is not going as smoothly as it should be. And so what I wanted to do was to go with your colleagues over some of my reasons for this committee and talk about my vision as well for this committee. And it certainly is in line and in keeping with some of the wishes of the President of the Senate. And so what we want to do is to address problems that have come up regarding this department in terms of budgeting and forecasting loads. I think that would be an appropriate place for us to begin and for us to look as well, and also to better understand some of the challenges that DHS has and will face, such as better data management, which you've already given a clear vision, Doctor. And I want to congratulate you for that, and maintaining a skilled workforce into the future. And I think sometimes we don't think about that as much as we should. And in terms of forecasting, I wrote myself another little note. Doctor, what I'd like for you to do is to show us a chart, especially one that will show data that highlights the impact of changing DHS as a result of legislation for the last three biennials. And I think it would give our members an opportunity to see how legislation has impacted what you do, and also will give us the opportunity, I think, to have a more shared vision and responsibility for the department. You know, it's a two-way pointing. It's at us as well as you, because we're basically board of directors. And if a lot of things continue to go wrong, whether the board accepts some responsibility for being the director. And so that's some of the things I want to see. Just instead of asking a lot of questions, have DHS come back if necessary, we want to ensure members' questions are answered. That if members ask questions today, I don't want to have to second-guess your management strategy for us. I want you to say, these are questions in response to what Senator Weston or Senator Winters ask on last Tuesday. And your opening remarks will be geared toward the answering of those questions before we go on to new information. Okay. And what I'd like for us to entertain is to work with the department in generating solutions to the challenges that the department is facing, not only in forecasting, but in budgeting and other problems, you know, that you might face. A good, for instance, is that when we kicked, 50,000 people off the Oregon Health Plan, those people came back in through TANF. TANF has laws that has administrative rules that when you come in, you immediately go on the Oregon Health Plan. So we might have put 50,000 off over here, but they're coming back in through another doorway. And sometimes I think legislators might not understand that as clearly as they need to, because we're thinking that we have lost that cost on this side only to entertain it on the other side. And I think sometimes that is not as clear as it should be. And so now what I'd like to do is talk about my vision and my request for this committee. And Mr. McKilvian, if you would send some data, some information, or some notes to the committee in terms of the, I'd appreciate it. That as we look at what our objectives are in this committee, that a work plan would just outline some of what I hope to accomplish with this committee. And you have that, and we'll go over that in just a few minutes.
Okay.
And what I want to do is invite all the members, all five of us, to generate questions for DHS prior to future meetings. Can you guys accommodate me on that one? Senator, just a minute, just that if you can just answer yes to this one, and that is that if you have questions for DHS, that prior to the meeting, as much of the good as to be possible, that you will send them those questions so they can respond to.
Excellent idea, ma'am.
Thank you. I don't want you to softball it either. And you know, Senator, you have a long history with DHS.
I'm sitting here looking at this.
And see, so what I want to do is to make sure we ask the hard questions. If we ask the hard questions at a time when they have more time to have a clear vision as opposed to being in the legislative process, then hopefully you can come back with those questions before that particular time, and they can be clear and thorough, and we'll know the direction that we're going together, because I want this to be a shared relationship. Lastly, but certainly not the least of all of this, I would like this committee to be a forum for you to critically review statutes and policies that the legislature may have implemented and may have adversely affected the ability of DHS. Now, this part of my first question and comments to you, to properly plan for and serve vulnerable Oregonians. Profile who is being affected by what we do, so that when I go home to my district and 3 o'clock in the morning I'm getting phone calls, Senator, I don't know what the hell you guys are doing. And listen, they can curse when they call you on the phone, so please don't. But do you know what you did? I don't know whether you knew what you're doing, but this is what you did, da 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 da. And caseworkers getting people who are angry with them because of something the legislature has done. And we're talking about people being more violent every day. They're violent because they're hungry, and that we change the rules, sometimes willy-nilly, without knowing. And you accept them because you don't want to say, well, Mr. and Ms. Legislature, I don't know whether you know what you have done. And sometimes, inadvertently or not, it happens. So when people are having funding cuts and major policy changes created these kind of scenarios, I think that we should know about them so that people that are working on the front line will also and can also kind of anticipate the anger of people who come into those offices as they go about that. So with that, any comments for the comments on the vision piece of this?
I like it, Madam Chair.
Okay. And
well, I really don't, because as you aptly stated, so much of this historically, and in looking and going through the historical events, and I know another person in the audience was here when I was here, when the department and prior to its creation, So, and I'll basically only have one question when we get there. And my boss, who was Ed Westerdahl, I see quoted here out of the governor's office when the creation occurred, and the same mission. Mine will be about the mission and why it's taken us 30 some odd years and we still haven't gotten it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Senator, any comments from you?
Well, my only concern, I think you addressed this, Madam Chair, is as we go forth to do our good work, I think we should be ever mindful of the workload we put on the department.
Absolutely.
In their normal job, or just in the normal course of providing services to some of the clients DHS provides service to, they're getting pulled pillar to post, and then here we have Bruce sitting in front of what I have no idea, but it's got to be probably his 20th interim committee today. No, 20th appearance. I don't know, and six interim committees, and they're all asking different questions with regard to trying to do good work for the people of the state of Oregon. So my only suggestion to us, concern, is as we go forward to do the necessary work we're about to embark on, that we be mindful and respectful of the department's time and director's energies.
Madam Chair.
Senator Weiner.
I do have a one question, and maybe it's something that we should discuss, of what is the goal, you know, our goal. You know, certainly having the department come to us and doing an overview, and maybe I wasn't listening carefully, but as to what is expected out of this particular panel of legislators, in some respects, I think we've overviewed this department since 1969 in some facet or the other, in some way or the other, in order to with legislative proposals, and so I just would like to have some sense of which direction we're moving.
Let me sum it up in this one little sentence I have here. This is our problem, and not just a problem of the state agency, and what can we as lawmakers do differently?
Well, when we say problem, I guess I'm trying to get my arms around it constantly. Certainly they stay in the paper a lot.
Okay, let me just go back. Yeah. Senator Winters, and I thought that when we talked about looking at budgeting and forecasting and caseloads, that's a problem. We already know that that's one of the things we want to take a good look at. We also want to look at the challenges that this department is faced with, and how can we as a legislature look at this shared responsibility that both of us have. And unless we can do that, we're not going to be looking for solutions as a state together, because the people sent us here to say to the department, you're going in the wrong direction because it's costing us too much money to operate, or either you are not going in the right direction, and so therefore what can we do to help you to implement the kind of policies that would allow you to go in the right direction, but also when things go wrong, that we have a shared responsibility of that. $172 million didn't just come out of the sky that people mismanaged the department. Policies had something to do with that $172 million. And I don't want to get on my soapbox this early, so we won't just talk about that now, but that's the kind of thing that I'm trying to have us take a look at. And if you have in your Senator Weston, have any other ideas, Mr. Pacovian can take those right now. Was there something else you want to support?
No, I'm just trying to get a framework from where you're headed.
Right.
You know, whether it is overview, whether it is specific elements within sight of the overview.
Right. So what I will do is have John, and John, I hope you're listening, come down and give you a copy of what I see as my vision, and that's what I thought I had laid out, and maybe it wasn't clear enough for this committee, and we can go over those again. But right now, Mr. Pacovian, we'll do a
second. Mm-hmm. Someone might come out and review the work plan.
Okay.
Do.
Okay. Please.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. In front of you and in your packet, and Senator Winters, some of this may address, at least give you a picture of where the committee will be going in terms of issues covered, is the draft work plan. You'll see it's outlined by meeting 1, 2, 3, and 4. Meeting 1 is this meeting today and an overview. By meeting 2, there's going to be a request that the committee spend that entire meeting looking at just information management technology and financial processes, especially since those two are so tightly integrated together. And in terms of questions, if the committee would like, might be preferable, in fact, and I'll put out a memo to each one of your offices, to solicit questions to come back to me. I'll aggregate them, get them to Senator Carter so we don't have too much repetition, and then submit all those questions to DHS directly. It'd be good to get the committee 2 weeks out. Therefore, when they come in, there's not a lot of them having to say, we're going to come back later with those answers. They'll know in advance. By meeting three, and then, of course, under each topic, there's some objectives. The President's office did ask that the committee look at what they hope to accomplish. So under the work plan, you'll see objectives outlined. And that, again, is kind of a working dynamic document. There's the other things I'm sure you're going to want to cover. By the time we get to meeting three, the committee is supposed to be looking at agency workforce issues, capacity to kind of accomplish the things that they've talked about wanting to do and need to do. And meeting four will be set aside to have them come back and address issues that come up in these meetings that I think, as opposed to them just writing a large, long draft of material for you to try to read later, that it's sometimes hard, generate questions and have them come back at a meeting to where they can start walking through those specific issues that come up in the first two or three meetings. Just as a quick aside, too, you did get an email for this that you might not have had a chance to see. Senator Carter would like to entertain the idea of perhaps trying to meet down in the Medford area towards the end of February. One of our members, Senator Bates, who cannot be here today because of a patient caseload, has a lot of trouble getting up here. And so we're looking at possibly trying to meet February 28th, which would require you to come up on the 27th. And so if you could take a look at your calendars at some point and feedback to me about your availability, we'll see if we can arrange if that's feasible as well. And thank you. Other than that, just want to recognize the fact we have some nice coffee over there. Thank you, Senator Carter. This is not the committee is not allowed to purchase coffee, and Senator Carter was nice enough to purchase that for the committee.
Got some from Cafe Today.
See, that's what you have.
You gotta communicate, Margaret.
With that, Senator, I don't have any more housekeeping or points to raise. Senator Devlin will be here approximately 9:30. According to his staff.
Okay. Any other comments before we go start the hearing process? I'd like to welcome Dr. Goldberg, the Department of Human Services.
You want to have a close the organizational gap?
Okay. What I'd like to do is close the organizational part of this this committee and open up for an informational hearing. And we'd like to welcome Dr. Goldberg and Mr. Saki with us here today. And you have received from us, Dr., our intent for the day and also what we'd like to have, which is an overview of human services. And it might be a little repetitive to some of the people that's in the audience, but I don't think that we should leave the stone unturned in terms of being clear about the challenges that you face and where you've been versus where you are right now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Carter, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bruce Goldberg, Director of the Department of Human Services. We, as Senator Carter mentioned, will be starting way back and really providing a history of the department. This is, as Senator Westland indicated, the sixth committee, interim committee, been before in the last couple of weeks, and there's certainly been a lot of scrutiny of the department, hoping that this morning we can sort of take a step back from some of that and look at sort of where we've been to get to where we are today. First off, Senator Carter, I hope you had an opportunity to watch your team on TV yesterday.
I was at my team yesterday, Doctor. In the audience, go Seahawks.
Okay. Wow. That's better than the rest of us. I think there's a quote, something about those who don't learn from history are bound to repeat it, and indeed I think that we'll see. We've been through a lot of historical twists and turns over the years in looking at DHS, and we certainly share your vision that we are all in this together, that we need to look at how we can move on, and we're hoping to look and work with you in this committee at the opportunity to look at what are the tools that we need to assure success out into the future. Having said that, let me start with sort of where we've been from. And we're going to take you back to 1983, which is the beginning of the state hospital. 1883, not 1983, excuse me. We're going back a lot of years. And when we get up to the 60s and 70s, I'm sure there's many in the room that can probably give this presentation better than I, because I'm a relative newcomer, having just been 10 weeks with the department. There's many who have a much longer history than I. In 1889, the state training school was established at McLaren. The Board of Health in 1903. In 1907, the State Institution for the Feeble-Minded, and James Taze told me they uncovered a plaque that also named this the Epileptically Insane, and that was later called Fairview. In 1910, Eastern Oregon Insane Asylum was created. 1913, the State Industrial School for Girls at Hillcrest, along with the Child Welfare Commission. The State Board of Control was created in 1913. And we get up to 1939, where we had the Public Welfare Commission, which was created to oversee aid to families with dependent children. 1943, the Temperance and Rehabilitation Division of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission was created, the sort of forebearings of our A&D programs. It was not until 1959 that the Department of Employment was created. In 1961, the Mental Health Division was finally created. In 1965, the Corrections Division was created. In 69, we abolished the Board of Control and instead established the Public Welfare Division, which we'll talk about in a little bit. The first state multi-service center was created in 1969. It was the Albina Human Resources Center. In 1971, the Board of Health was abolished, and the Health Division, what we all know as our Public Health Division, was created. And in 1971, the Children's Services Division was created. This is probably at about the time that Senators Winter and Carter and everyone else can begin to chime in and feel free to in terms of some of the history, because I think it's important to have some of those who are a part of it to be a part of this as well.
Madam Chair, just for the record, I wasn't born yet in 1970.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I'm a little lacking in the institutional knowledge.
If I weren't sitting here in the witness chair, I could say something about maturity and immaturity, but I certainly won't.
Senator Carter, I was here in 69. Okay. So I was here when we were talking about the coordination prior to actually developing the legislation to create the department.
And this was the structure prior to what you'll see was the Department of Human Resources. And it was a division of public welfare, mental health, public health, employment, and corrections, all of which reported directly to the governor. Then there was created the Department of Human Resources. And why? Well, one was it would eliminate bouncing of persons from pillar to post, as we heard still happens. Number two was that, you know, one problem has been that employees in independent divisions take a narrow view of problems and only consider what their agencies can provide. There was really a sense of having a greater vision of organizing services that integrated more. And I think as Senator Winters noted, it's interesting, this was 1971, and, you know, 35 years later, we're still seeking to do the same thing. What we have is absolutely ridiculous. We should have treatment teams made up of welfare, employment, vocational rehab, and and other workers. That was Senator L.B. Day. So, to try and do that, the Department of Human Resources was created. And what you see here is the first organizational chart, noting that the total fund biennial budget was $650 million. Comparing that now to a budget of, well, for the department, it's close to $9.8 billion, and this has in it corrections and employment and many functions which are no longer in the Department of Human Services. The department was organized, as you can see, there was public health, children's services, employment, corrections, mental health, public welfare, voc rehab, special programs, and Oregon chapter, ORS chapter 184 set forth really two responsibilities for the department. One was to provide programs for the delivery to the public of the services assigned the department, and two, to undertake long-range planning for the effective and efficient delivery of services. Programs were to be administered through the divisions, not directly by the department. And public welfare, as you saw previously, this was, in essence, has been called the mothership of the Department of Human Resources. And it was comprised of housing, children's services, senior services, OMAP, and AFS. And you can see those pieces that really then came together to form the Adult and Family Services. The Public Welfare Division was renamed. It became Adult and Family Services. AFS, just as a historical note, began as the State Relief Committee in 1933. It was then renamed the State Welfare Commission in 1939, the Public Welfare Division in 1971, and then Adult and Family Services in 1983. In 1981, Social Senior Services was created from AFS and the Office of Elderly Affairs. And those sort of came out of Adult and Family Services. We then created Senior Services. And a quote from Leo Hegstrom, the DHR director, what's important to understand is that the administrator of each of these divisions is primarily accountable for the performance of their divisions. Therefore, your dialogue will be with these divisions concerning legislation affecting them. 1985, housing became a separate entity, came out of the Department of Human Resources. And alcohol and drug programs moved to the director's office. 1987, corrections became its own entity as well. Moves off to the side. And the Office of Health Policy was created. That too, along with A&D programs, were put in the director's office. Kevin Kincannon had an observation around this time that the department was really modeled after a holding company. The independent agencies that were merged into the department maintained separate identities within Oregon law, and I think that that's an important observation, because I think that really gets at what Senator Winters indicated. This is 1989. This is now 18 years after a reorganization that was meant to integrate this, and yet in 1989 the director still noted that the department maintained separate identities within Oregon law. 1990, the Office of Medical Assistance Programs was created. And that, interestingly enough, was created in the director's office and along with A&D programs. 1993, employment became a separate entity. So you see about now it's 25 years later, employment, corrections, and housing have moved off and become separate agencies. In 1995, the Commission on Children and Families and the Oregon Youth Authority, which had been within the department structure, move off as well and become their own separate agencies. And then we get to 1999, and the Department of Human Resources was renamed the Department of Human Services. This was Senate Bill 303. So we're now 7 years beyond this point in time. Gary Weeks in 2000 observed that more than at any time in its 29-year history, DHS, with its 6 divisions and 3 program offices, is functioning as a single agency. And indeed, this has always been the vision and what we continue to move to. In 2000, the Community Partnership Team and other administrative offices was established. And this was the structure of the department in 2000. Alcohol and drug programs, public health, services for children and family, seniors and developmentally disabled, the child protective team, mental health, AFS, Voc Rehab, OMAP, the Office of Medical Assistance. At this point, I'm actually glad that Senator Winters doesn't have her pig here. I would have owed about $300, and we're just 10 minutes into this because there's been a lot of acronyms. HR, Human Resources. What?
Would have fed a lot of people.
It would have. Okay. I'll still make my donation. OIS, Office of Information Services, and financial planning were all the functions of the department. 2001 was the DHS reorganization, and House Bill 2294 abolished DHS divisions. And all of the duties, functions, and powers of Adult and Family Services, the State Office for Services to Children and Families, the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division, the Voc Rehab Division, the Health Division, the Seniors and Disabled Services Division, the Alcohol and Drug Abuse Programs, Office of Medical Assistance Programs, and the Office of the Director are transferred to the Department of Human Services. You know, previous to this, all of these agencies still really functioned still as their own separate holding companies, as indeed Kevin Kincannon had described in 1989. It's now 12 years after that finally there is legislation that really creates a unified Department of Human Services. This reorganization emphasizes accountability, integrated services, collaboration, and shared responsibility. Also, we can improve outcomes for clients and communities. I think this is a familiar and recurrent theme about where we're all seeking to be in the Department of Human Services. This is 2002, Bobby Mink. The reorganization organized the department into clusters. And, you know, it's at this point that I think I'm going to turn things over to Clyde to take us now from that's sort of the history, and this brings us up to the reorganization and what the reorganization sought to do.
Dr. Litton, before Mr. Sykes starts, what I'd like to do is committee that we would like to at least culminate today's activities between about 12 to 12:30, preferably at 12. But I don't want to squash any questions that you might have.
I think we'll be done sooner.
Okay.
All set, Clyde?
Thank you. Chair Carter and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Clyde Psyche. I'm the Deputy Director for the Department of Human Services. So in 2001, as most of you know, the department underwent a major reorganization. And when you look at the slide that we have up now, it displays at that point in time the way the clusters, as the divisions were renamed, were organized. And we had, starting from the top, the health services cluster, children, adult, and families, senior and people with disabilities, continuous systems improvement, community human services, the administrative services, and the Office of Finance and Policy Analysis. The children and adults and families cluster is composed of programs that formerly resided in the services to children and families division, adult and family services, and in vocational rehabilitation. Senior and people with disabilities were composed of programs from the old senior, the old SDSD, Senior and Disabled Services Divisions, and the Developmental Disability Program in the old Office of Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities. Continuous systems improvement was an effort by the department to coordinate and to centralize training, performance measures, and employee development activities. And, of course, community human services was composed of the field services structure of the children, adult, and families cluster, or the old AFS and SCF, and the senior and disabled services cluster. In 2001, prior to 2001, the various administrative functions, the heads of these entities had reported to the director. Director Mink at that time decided that really what he needed was a chief administrative officer, and so he consolidated the administrative functions, Office of Information Services, Human Resources, Office of Public Affairs, Financial Service Facilities, and the Office of Forms and Document Management under the Administrative Services Cluster and appointed a Chief Administrative Officer.
Okay, question.
Yes, ma'am.
So, where is forecasting?
Forecasting is in the very next cluster.
Then, and the reason I'm asking this is when I look at financial services, I don't see how what happens in financial services is not in bed with forecasting, because all of them are cost tenants. And if something is a cost, how can you forecast what your needs are going to be if forecasting is not right down in bed with financial services? Because I'm trying to find out, how do these people talk to each other?
Sure.
If indeed it's not a part of this financial services piece.
Right. Yeah. Well, Senator Carter, I think your point is a point well taken, and it's one of the issues that we really kind of put at the top of our priority list. We also think that we need to have a much stronger tie between forecasting, budgeting, and the accounting functions. Because, quite frankly, that could be one of the issues that kind of led us to where we are today. And I think I'll let Director Goldberg tell you about some of the things he has planned in that area.
Chair Carter, members of the committee, that's exactly one of the issues we've begun to look at. As I think you know, I've asked Jim Scherzinger to come and begin to, he started work and begin to, in essence, function as a chief financial officer for the organization. And what Jim's job is a couple, is to, one, look at how we need to align some of our financial structures within the department to help us to recruit what would be an ongoing, a long-term chief financial officer for the department, as well as to really look at how we can assure that we have a common set of financial metrics across the organization that all then roll up and have some central form of accountability. And looking to do really two things: to establish individual programs that have the real-time financial information that they need in terms of both budget and expenses, and to be able to have programs be held accountable for both, not only for the programmatic management, how the programs deliver their services, but also for the finances of those programs, to be able to work within their budget and to be able to establish that at the programmatic level, so that they then roll up in a common way across the department into a common budget. Because certainly what we've seen is that different ways that different of our programs and divisions have accounted for things, whether that be positions, how they allocate federal and state costs to physicians, has in the past been done in a variety of different ways, and there's a need to standardize that across the department, and that's indeed one of the things we're going to be looking at.
Question, Madam Chair. Inside of administrative services, do you also have contractual service? You have a unit that's responsible for contracts, both in developing those contracts, but also in the auditing and follow-up of those contracts.
Chair Carter, Senator Winters, that's correct. We do have a contracts unit. Their responsibility is to work with the program people, not just to develop contracts, but also to provide technical assistance, support, and training to program staff in the contract administration piece, which is one of the most critical pieces of our whole contracting area.
Are you looking at in the future some way of having systematically a way of auditing those contracts to assure that we are getting what we have contracted for?
Chair Carter, Senator Winters, we are actually doing some of that now through our internal audit unit in the director's office, and that's a major piece of their work, is looking at the contracted services and auditing for performance. And then we had the Office of Finance and Policy Analysis, in which the budget rate setting, budget development, rate setting, and forecasting were responsibilities. And finally, the Health Services Cluster, which consists of Public Health, the Old Health Division, the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services, which is the Mental Health and Addiction Services, Old Office of Alcohol and Drug, were combined, and then, of course, the Office of Medical Assistance Program, the state Medicaid agency. In 2004, there were two more moves that were made, and which would kind of bring us up to date into our current structure. In 2004, the Continuous System Improvement Office.
Can we go back for a minute to the last slide?
Yes.
Under the health piece, are people very clear in terms of the finiteness of their budget, let's say the Oregon Health Plan? How do they know when the well is empty?
Senator Carter, we do have the budgets broken up by the three entities. It's not just one health services budget. And so the Office of Medical Assistance Programs does have their own budget that they work against. I think that with your permission, mm-hmm. what I'd like to do is call up Vic Todd, who's Assistant Director for Finance and Policy Analysis, and I think he could probably answer your question a lot more completely than I can.
And this would be the time, members, if there are questions you might have in terms of financing and forecasting. Do my guess. Thank you, Mr. Todd, for joining us.
Senator Carter, for the record, my name is Vic Todd. I'm Assistant Director for Finance and Policy. We do have budgets for each clusters and internal to each cluster as well, down to the program levels. Some of the issues that we face at this point currently is really getting down to even more detail level. And
so when we change policy direction in the legislature, and you know it as a department, how do they get the message before they continue to work that there is going to be a limitation as a result of the policy direction of the legislature, so that they won't continue to forecast, even though it's going to mean that when you look at certain communities of people, that somebody is going to be negatively affected because you're saying put a cap and hold it here. So how do they know when to stop either allowing people to come in through the system or measuring the number of people that are in the pipeline that's going to affect what the policy is? And that hopefully you can get back to the legislature and say to the legislature, we capped it here, but there are people in the pipeline that we couldn't afford not to, because you're going to go for lawsuits at that particular point. How do you say to the legislature, there's nothing we can do about those that are in the pipeline. We have to carry out the will of the law in terms of the numbers of people that are in the pipeline as opposed to those that we've capped?
Chair Carter, that's obviously a very difficult question. But as issues are brought forward, whether it's a proposal or an anticipated federal change, the budget staff work with the program areas as well as forecasting groups and the research people to try to determine what we can anticipate for an outcome for a particular issue. And so they're involved in that discussion in terms of populations that may, you know, continue on until, you know, such point that they are discontinued.
Dr. Gilbert, does the department have a means of saying to the legislature that the policies that you just directed us to carry out will certainly be capped at what you requested, but you have these in the pipeline and this is going to be affected? Committee, does that sound like it might be a problem that probably we are not looking at as a legislature and that you are forced to carry out in terms of the will of the statute itself?
Could you restate your question?
And my question was, how can OMAP determine how they continue to operate with the kind of policies that they get from us? Yes, they can go up and cap, but they can't do anything about the people that are in the pipeline. How do they manage to deal with that issue? And how do they come back to the legislature and say, we've capped is what you told us to do, and we 50,000 people are going to be affected by it, but there's nothing in terms of the statute itself that we can do about these people that are in the pipeline?
Chair Carter, members of the committee, I think that's one of the issues you're seeing being played out now in a larger scale, which is that for some of our programs, and particularly for the Medicaid program, we can cap some things that by federal statute, eligibility for some of those programs doesn't have a finite cap, that although it may be our intent to look at how we can limit some of the financial exposure of the state, indeed for some of the programs, if someone's eligible, they will be enrolled in the program. And so what we need to continue to look at, and I think refine our abilities to do, is to be able to anticipate that when there's direction given and some of the changes in policy at the state level, that we understand what and what won't be the effects of those. For instance, having seen the closure of OHP Standard and having seen the subsequent ability of some individuals who had been on the standard program to qualify in OHP Plus is an example of how state policy was kind of disconnected from the federal policy that guides some of our programs.
So in terms of communication, and Senator Wynette's going to get back to you after this one, in terms of communication between you and the legislature, how could you have said to them, what you did this past session did allow us to make a change, but at the same time, federal law will guide a lot of this, statute will guide a lot of this, and we're going to end up with some expenses beyond what you expected to not see. How do you get back to the legislature, to the chairs of these committees, to the president, to the speaker, giving them that information?
Chair Carter, I think my jobs as the department head is to try and be as explicit as I can and that we can be in terms of putting out those choices and the consequences of those. Having said that, I think that that's one of the things that I'm hoping that we'll cover over the next 2 months of this committee is to assure that we've got the tools and ability to do some of that and to provide the appropriate analysis. Certainly, no one can predict the future, and no one can predict the future with 100% accuracy, but I think we need to look at how we can continue to improve our abilities to understand what effects policy changes will have or won't have.
Senator,
thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have currently the management tools in place? And I'm looking at not only I'm going to the field now because the field will drive the numbers. You know, that's where eligibility takes place. Are currently the management tools in place and the communication from OMAP centrally down through to the field to where you can get the kind of information through that conduit that you need in order to give us the decisions here in your communication with us? Because I think that's very critical when we look at data, because that data is derived from eligibility, and casework practice says to me that I'm a caseworker. I mean, as a caseworker, I'm going to be certain that my client is taken care of.
Right.
And so, you know, that then begs the question, and I think Senator Carter raised how your budget and the decision-making process, well, in that process, are you able to give those tools to the field so that the information that you're getting back at this level is information that's accurate and relevant in order to make the decisions here?
Chair Carter and Senator Winters, I think that one of the issues there is indeed about how we can assure that we have a standardized way in which we determine determine eligibility and enroll people in our programs, and that we have certainly begun to do some of that, and there are some programs that are able to have some of those tools, and we can have some of them come forward. I think we have a ways to go in terms of being able to do that. And indeed, you're right. The issue is, one, how do you we know what the eligibility standards are. How do we assure that they're interpreted in a common way? And then how do we audit that to assure that that's indeed happening? In the end, some of that is also a resource issue, and we need to look at the resources to provide that sort of audit and oversight. And I would say that at this point in time, we have aired more, not aired, but we've put our resources more both as a state and as a department into how we continue to provide the services and not as much into the administration and the oversight in terms of such things as eligibility.
From a follow-up, from a practical standpoint, if I ask the question of the data set that's coming out from eligibility from Multnomah County is the same kind that's coming from Marion County, and the practice is the same, would that be an accurate statement?
I don't know, and I think that's what we need to determine.
Mr. McCovey.
Thank you, Senator. And this may be kind of re-asking Senator Winter's question differently. I can't imagine the complexity of looking at budgeting and caseload figures. This must come from a variety of people and systems that, like a funnel, it eventually finds its way to the bottom. Is there a way in your system now, or are you looking at a way where when you get to perhaps a forecasting number or a budget and that you find there's an error of somehow tracking back either the system or the individuals or the department where maybe there's misinformation or wrong information somehow is being formulated wrong that's kind of resulting in a misstep? Is this part of the audit process to actually walk back and find out where perhaps the issues or problems are occurring?
Chair Carter, Mr. Berkovian, I think that's a very good question from the standpoint of what we have really been determining over the past few years is how different the data is with respect to definitional sets between each division in terms of what is a client. And so as we have begun to do this forecasting centrally, that really has brought that to the forefront. And so one of the major issues we've had to deal with is how do we get more common data sets and data definitions. So that's a continual issue for us and will be into the future. We are working on ways to overcome that, and what that does is bring forward just what you're identifying, and that is errors in the systems in terms of how people may have been coded, those sorts of things. And so then that it lets us bring that forward and lets us then go back into the system and fix that coding. But it's an ongoing process.
Senator?
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Two questions, actually. First one, to make an analogy, when we see the forecasts in terms of revenue for the state, one of the clear indications that we get beyond all the other factors that they look at are the quarterly filings that are made in terms of taxes, and obviously our best forecast is our May forecast because that has the most just absolute clear data on how accurate our revenue projections are. Data travels in two different directions. If you have a forecast in terms of what you forecast in terms of client growth or changes in clients, do you get enough data from the field level to tell you when your forecast is going off from where you had projected it to be, so that you get some sort of advance warning that things are not what you expected them to be?
Chair Carter, Senator Devlin, we get most of the data that we get comes out of statewide systems, so it's not data that we collect from local levels as such. The challenge I think that we have for the most part when there is deviations from the forecast is determining what was the effect that caused that, because there are so many different factors that can influence the overall caseload changes for the various programs. So we would, and as part of that process, talk to field staff about what they're seeing in terms of client flow and so forth. But the data itself actually comes through different data systems.
Chair Carter, Senator Devlin, I think what you're getting at is the need to develop an increasing sophistication with how we do some things like look at some of the indicators that, such as numbers of visits to our field offices, which may be a, so to speak, early indicator of which way caseloads may be going. Obviously, if more people come through the door, that may be an indication of increasing caseloads. But I think what you're getting at is our need to develop an increasing sophistication to look at what other kinds of data we should or shouldn't be using to provide both an early indicator as well as a validity check of doing some of this.
Follow up. Then the second question, OHP standard, going away from what the current status might be or what the concerns are about what the long-term status might be, that's a population that supposedly will be capped, is capped. How do you manage that down to the field level? I mean, obviously it's not going to be a stagnant population, I don't think. I mean, it may not have as much changes as other client bases that you have. But it will go up and down in terms of which clients are being served and which go in other areas. So you're going to have to know basically how many spaces you have left open is what it's going to come down to. And the field offices are going to have to know that. Or I'm assuming you're going to have, you do have some criteria for who is served and who is not. And
Chair Carter, Senator Devlin, currently the, you know, the program has been declining in enrollment down to the target of approximately 25,000, which is what there is the budget to handle. We are not yet at a level where I believe you're getting at, which is
you're going to actually have to manage that level.
That's exactly it. Right now, through what's been euphemistically called attrition, people have been leaving the program. We're not quite down at a level where we'll have to then manage to a number, and are beginning to develop the strategies with which to do that. That's a clearly going to be a challenging process in terms of how you do manage the enrollment in a program like that. At this point, we're not doing that.
Okay. Thank you,
Madam. That was part of my earlier question as well. How does the field know the effects of the policies that we make so that the pipeline can, so that they can cap, but you still have to deal with what's in the pipeline? Thank you. Further questions for Mr. Todd?
Okay, I'll be back.
So, Chair Carter, to continue bringing us back to 2004. Where continuous systems improvement as an entity in the division was abolished, and community human services, which was a field structure, what happened there is that the various pieces of the field were moved back into their policy clusters, which we felt at that point in time there needed to be a much stronger connection between policy and the field, which is why that move was made.
So explain it to me again in terms of how the department is better able to facilitate information and data that gets back to you faster.
Chair Carter, information and data through
in
the...
In terms of what's happening in the field.
In the field.
Yeah.
Well, Chair Carter, I think that's an ongoing struggle for us just because of one of the issues we face and challenges is the size of the department. I think really our field policy people have been charged with the responsibility of facilitating that communication and meet with the leadership in the field on a regular basis around how to communicate those policy changes. And I think one of the things that we've been really talking to them about is that, and I think if I'm not mistaken, Senator Devlin may have mentioned this, it has to be a two-way communication because it's not only the people in central office and the managers telling people in the field what to do, but we have to be very open in getting feedback from them and kind of hearing what's happening on the ground so that, you know, oftentimes I think they're the first people to realize what the impact of the change is and how it's impacting the clients they're serving. And so there's CHS and CSI being abolished. We've also made some other changes recently. We've moved the Office of Investigations and Training. This is the entity that primarily focuses on abuse and neglect investigations with our mental health and our developmental disability population. They were formerly situated in the health cluster, and we've moved them into the director's office to give them a certain amount of autonomy. And we've also, in 2005, realized that we needed to better coordinate all the various recovery efforts we had going on in the department. These efforts were taking place in about three or four different parts of the department. And so what we did was centralize the various recovery efforts for better coordination, hoping to maximize recoveries to a greater extent. And so here you have our current structure with the director's office, children, adults and families, senior and people with disabilities, administrative services, Office of Finance and Policy Analysis, and the health services cluster with our current biennial budget. I'd like to quickly run through kind of a high-level overview of the clusters and the services they provide. I know that there are probably members of the committee who could give this presentation maybe even better than I could. But we also have program people in the audience if you'd like more detailed information as we walk through this. We'll start with the director's office. In the director's office, we have several program-related functions. One I mentioned earlier at the bottom of the left-hand part of the org chart, the Office of Investigations and Training, which we recently moved in there. We also have a tribal liaison. We do a lot of work with the tribes, coordinating services. The tribes contract with us to provide a lot of services to tribal members. And we value our relationship with the tribes and work hard to maintain a good, positive relationship with them. Audit and consulting services is our internal audit function. Every year we develop an audit plan. We identify risks in areas that we think may be at risk and develop an audit plan for that year. And then the Governor's Advocacy Office, which is the ombudsman function, formerly was located in the Governor's office and a number of years back was moved into the department. They deal with client concerns and complaints and a lot of questions from legislators and the public. The next chart I think is a very telling chart which maybe outlines some of the reasons we've had many challenges in the last 5 to 10 years, and it's really kind of a chronology of DHS directors. And in the 70s, you can see we had four different directors. In the 80s, two with Mr. Hagstrom and Mr. Concannon. And in the 90s, three with Mr. Concannon and Gene Thorne, who was an interim director for probably about 6 months in between Kevin and Director Weeks coming in. And then in the 5 years of 2000, of the current decade, six different people have been assigned the privilege of being the director of the department. And I just thought that was kind of a very telling slide.
That is a very telling
slide. On your names, would you make the name Dick Davis, Bob Davis?
Chair Carter, Senator Winters, I will make that correction.
I know what you mean. Bob Davis.
I'm just thankful that it's at slide 29 that we actually, you made your first correction.
But you know, this really points out, I'm looking at that, yeah. The 70s you had before, and in the 70s, you know, I might point out that, you know, we were in the coordination and development stage of the department, and you had four directors, and then in the 80s there was two, and the 90s there was three, and in 2000, one, two, three, four, five, six.
We still have 4 years to go.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
And
so I think you're saying is that lots of instability, lots of policy changes, lots of inconsistency, because every new person that comes in have their own vision of how they want things to go, and that's what I mean by instability.
That's exactly right, Chair Carter.
Yes.
And we're hoping that we are entering into a pretty stable period now for hopefully the next 4 or 5 years.
Senator Wessel.
Would Trevelyan
Chairman
quite say his last
name? Dr. Trevelyan?
Trevelyan.
Yeah, Chair Carter, Senator Westland, I believe, and I could be wrong, Dr. Trevelyan was the administrator of the mental health division,
yeah.
but never made it to the director position.
Yeah. Wow, and that was the 80s.
Yeah.
That's quite telling.
So, moving to the next slide, I will turn to Dr. Goldberg and have him explain what this graph demonstrates.
Well, this was actually a survival curve, which was presented to me based on what my anticipated longevity would be in the department based on the time in office of the previous six directors. And what you can see, you actually don't have the time period on the left, but Kevin Kincannon was director for 8 years. That's why he's up there at the top. And then Gary Weeks, the first time through Weeks 1, he was 6 years as director of the department. Bobby Mink, each one of those lines is a year. Bobby Mink, 2 years. Gene Thorne, a year. Gary Weeks, the second time, approximately a year. Brian Johnston, 6-8 months. And then this was done before I started. It really is a mathematical survival curve that based on those five individuals was predicting how long I would last. I'm pleased to say that I have now surpassed the prediction. The prediction was I wouldn't even make it into as the director. I've now surpassed that and hope to provide some of the stability going on into the future.
Madam Chair?
Senator Westland.
Bruce, could you go back to 29?
Sure.
You know, if you looked at that chart and you were a stock analyst analyzing a Fortune 500 company listed on the New York Stock Exchange, you would give a pretty low probability of success or value to the shares of that company. And without saying that DHS is a business or a company, I mean, you could make it akin to a $5 billion a year corporation.
Absolutely.
Where they are charged with going, you know, into families, distressed families, where they have to take children away from biological parents, treat severely diseased individuals where some of them die, and you would hope that if nothing else there was management continuity, you know, and a culture of stability. And we wonder, you know, why our quote stock isn't valued any higher. There it is.
All right. I think that your point is well taken about the instability in leadership. Certainly, the work of the department is extremely important, and I think that given that, it's important to have the kind of stable and ongoing leadership to do that. One of the bright sides to that is that there have been a number of the programmatic leaders that have provided some of the stability throughout the last 10 years that I think has in some ways mitigated some of the problems that one could have had with continuous turnover.
And Chair Carter, in addressing your point on workforce management, I think Director Goldberg is absolutely right. While we've had a lot of instability there, we've had better stability at the levels below that. However, we're also looking at a workforce dynamic that within the next 5 to 10 years, most of those people are going to be eligible for retirement and quite probably will be leaving the workforce.
But if I could address that, and don't any of the department heads misinterpret this comment, please, because I'm glad you're there and have been there for a goodly number of years. It's been critical. It's one of the things that's at least allowed the agency to buoy itself as much as it has with this kind of turnover. But the problem with that thinking is that when the department heads have the tenure, the longevity, and the institutional knowledge, pretty soon you start getting a situation where the tail's wagging the dog, and that's not what this department needs. Your charge, Mr. Goldberg, is to change the culture of that institution, and I, for one, am very glad you're there.
Madam Chair, just an observation. If I look at the 20-year period, you have 5 individuals that were directors, and then in the 15-year period, you have 5 that were, I mean, 5 of the same individuals that were directors. Mm-hmm. So I just needed to do the overlap, because actually you take the overlap from the 70s, you got Leo, and then Kevin came in the 80s, and he carries forward in the 90s, and the same as with Gene and some of the others, just to put it in a little context, that they had some history and background, even though they might have left and returned.
And I think Senator Wesson's point is well taken, that if one is going to have sort of, it's interesting. Since 2000 was when we were quote-unquote reorganizing, and although that reorganization took place in statute and on paper, I think one of the issues that you were alluding to, Senator, is the idea of organizational change and transformation. How does an organization transform itself, create the kind of culture that we've been trying to do since 71, which is how do we look at a more holistic approach, how do we organize around people instead of programs and funding streams. A lot of the issues about how do we create some of the efficiencies that we need, that does mean changes in organizational culture. And I think you can see that, things can be done in statute and doesn't necessarily happen in reality.
And let's not forget that as the legislature, with good reason, the board of directors, to carry Senator Winter's analogy, or Senator Carr's analogy further, as your board of directors, mandates, commands you to implement a reorg, we go into the most severe recession impact on state general fund in this state's history. Mm-hmm. So we already asked you to dance on the head of a pin, and then as resources get tight and everyone's reluctant to cut services, we ask you to do the proverbial, more with less administratively. Two rivers converging that created a great deal of tumult and chaos.
We've been talking about this a lot lately, and I hope that's one of the issues that will work through with this committee as well as with the legislature over the next couple of years. We we've just come out, we're coming out of a recession, and during that time of continued budget cuts to the program, to the department, what we've done is maintained our ability to provide services while at the same time continuing to cut the administrative functions of the department in an effort to the best possible way try and maintain the service delivery. I think that's a natural instinct to try and do. As that's happened, I think some of the ways that we've needed to develop greater fiscal accountability, greater programmatic accountability in terms of outcomes, how to develop personnel and employee development, training, all those kinds of things are things that get put on the side during those periods. And we have a great staff. We need to look at how we continue to develop them, help them to be creative, how we can move forward, what are some of the tools we need to, I think, get back to that vision that has been in the state for the last 35 years. I'm continuing to be confident that we can do that. And, I think that that's what we all need to be working towards. I think was the importance of sort of going through publicly this morning the history that's come before us and where we've been and continuing to keep our eye on where we need to go.
Let me make a comment and have you respond to it. It appears to me that how things are looking around here is the executive and the legislative, is that when, and even some of the greatest transformationalists in terms of visionary leaders talk to speak to this issue, that when we want to make changes through policies, the legislature gives you this mandate. When you start making the changes, you talk to the governor. But the problem piece of it, you're talking to the governor, who has to then turn around and give us his vision through budgetary means for the next legislative year, when a valuable piece that is missing, it would appear to me, is that you don't go back to the Speaker and the President or the chairs of the committees and say, this is the effects of the changes that you have made, and you're going to see an increase in the numbers of people that are coming into the system, or you're going to see a change on one end of people coming into the system, which is going to affect the other end. You're going to still have what you thought you were trying to get around in terms of cost containment, but you still have it, and that there's a vacuum.
Chair Carter, if we continue to do things on a 2-year cycle like that in complex programs that are dynamic and change at much shorter intervals than a 2-year budget cycle, we'll continue to be locked into that. I think the idea is doing exactly what we're doing through this committee and through others, which is changing some of the dialogue and the way we look at what's happening in more real time, as opposed to sending messages and creating policies and budgets in a 2-year time frame. There's a lot that can happen both in terms of federal policy, in terms of economics, in terms of a variety of things that can happen in a few months' time that's going to have huge effects on how we deliver human services or the need for human services. We certainly look at what's happening right now with the Medicare drug bill. Mm-hmm. And here we have a dramatic change, and we need to be nimble and be able to react to that in a way that's appropriate. And You can't always anticipate everything that's going to happen a year and a year previously when you're developing a budget.
Right.
And I think the collaboration piece is the piece that I wanted to focus on a lot, because you cannot, there's no way that you can change what the federal demands are, and there's no way you can change what the state demands are, unless people are accountable and know what the outcomes will be when you make those kind of policy changes, and that the legislature needs to be apprised and a partner as a board of directors with you in terms of those changes. Thank you.
Okay.
You can go for it. Don't pay him any attention.
Okay. Let's see. Where were we here? So what I'd like to do now, Chair Carter, is just give you a brief high-level overview of the various cultures within the department, starting with administrative services, where we have combined the various administrative functions of the department into these, let's see, there's two, four, five, eight offices. Prior to the formation of administrative services, when we were in our divisional structure, every division had their own information technology shop. Every division had their own HR shop, their own contracting shop. And so literally in the department, we had seven different chief information officers, seven different personnel administrators, and...
That's driving me crazy.
Yeah. That stock just went lower.
I know.
Well, wait, no. That was prior to 1996. Now, in 1996, what happened is we identified several key functions: human resources, information technology, contracts, financial services, and consolidated those services into a single department-wide entity. So we now had, we're moving to what we call the shared services model, where you had one administrative unit that served the entire department. The other thing that was interesting to note is that in the administrative area prior to 96, each division set their own priorities for each of these administrative areas, and we very rarely looked at things on a department level. In 2000, the administrative services cluster was created, and that brings us up to date to the current structure we have today.
Senator Westland.
This may seem like a trivial question, but when I look at this absolute, you know, labyrinth of information up there, is there any significance to the fact that the OPAR does not have a border around their files or individual personnel, or is that just a you know, the wonders of technology not highlighting a color? All the rest have a white border.
No.
Is that supposed to tell us anything?
That it's more open or...
Yeah, I
enlightened.
Don't...
More enlightened.
People in the back.
Yeah, I think it does have a border, and I think you're now reading a little too much into this. If we go through the slides backwards, however, there's a secret message in there. But we'll let you take the slideshow home.
Okay.
Now, but I saw some heads nodding back there when we said, does it mean it's more open, or what does it mean?
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're just the wrong angle.
So
yeah,
exactly.
I want you to know I started that at the chair's request.
Well, you know, the administrative service clusters just brought the image back to me of when we first start talking about an integrated system. And I mean, this now is talking about all these clusters again, and I'm going to go back to the original goal and objective of the agency. And where are we in having a integrated or one document for the client? I mean, you know, the client comes in, and are we still having all these multiple documents to deliver services? Where are we?
Senator Carter, Chair Winters, I know this has been a ongoing interest of yours, and I can't speak to the issue of a single application form for clients, although I know we have been working in that area. One of the things we are doing, though, is because I know that you've asked this question several times, is that we are starting an initiative now to reduce the number of forms we have in the department. I think I've shared that number with you.
To put this in perspective, it isn't about the form. Mine is the delivery of service, and where we're not bouncing the person from one to the other. And each time that they come in, they have to fill out another form.
Right.
And that has been an objective for the department since 1970, which begs the other question of that. I see the Albina Multi-Service Center, which was created in the other old days, and when we did the reorganization, part of the objective was the reorganization was to create the one shop, if you will, concept. And I know White City, and so I want to, where are we in rolling out that development? Because, you know, I'm where it's the client driven. My mind is that, you know, we're to provide services to the client, and part of that was to make it accessible. That if we had one shop, it would be in the neighborhoods where the population was the greatest need. Those were some of the objectives back in, I believe it was 1901, whatever session that was. And so, where are we?
Well, Chair Carter and Senator Winters, I think we've made progress in this area. We still have a lot of work to do. We've undertaken initiatives like White City, and I think the Newmark Center in Coos Bay, but I can't sit here this morning and truthfully tell you where we need to be. We still have work to do in this area. I think we have made progress and we have success stories. However, we still have a ways to go.
Thank you, Chair. And this is, I got a springboard off of Senator Winter's question. What is the agency doing to kind of assess its movement toward whatever the objectives were from the reorganization? Is there outside, surveying or something going on to see how it's moving toward whatever the final objectives were of the reorganization? Surveying clients, looking internally, performance measures, that kind of thing.
Chair Carter, members of the committee, you know, it's my observation, having been there in the department 10 weeks, that what you've seen in terms of the changes in the last 6 years, the fact that we have had such an unstable environment, both programmatically and economically, the fact that we've continued to be looking at reductions in services at a time when we've had greater need for services in the state, has meant that there aren't the activities going on to the extent that I think we would all like to do to move some of that forward. And I think a lot of that is because of some resource issues. I think that it's also an issue of focus for the department, and I think those are some of the things we want to see moving forward in terms of doing that.
So if we were to look at the organizational chart that you showed us today, 1 year from now, then the will there be a changing of the slots? Will there be something that you show us where there will be greater collaboration between the field and the kind of technology that you have for getting information to and fro field so that your forecasting will work much better than it is today? Will we see something where you're saying that there is greater collaboration between your office, the governor's office, and the legislature?
Chair Carter, I don't think it'll be a new set of boxes on a chart. And you'll see a slide at the end that, that sort of speaks to that. You can draw the boxes any way you want. The issue is how you function. And I don't think now's the time to think up a different and new organizational structure. It's a time to become more functional. And I think that what you'll see and what we'll want to do is to be able to look at some of the outcomes. And I think they're the outcomes that we've talked about. They're being clear about what's happening fiscally, being clear about what's happening programmatically, and being able to look at and demonstrate the outcomes that we achieve in our programs. And I would hope to be able to come back in a year and be able to show you the processes and the progress towards achieving some of that. But to come back in a year with just a whole bunch of new boxes on a chart, I don't think is what... We continue to have the same vision as in 71, and you've seen how many different structures, and it's been interesting having gone through this presentation. There's a bunch of structures that were proposed that never even made it. This isn't about, I don't think it's about the structure, it's about how you carry out what the mission is, and that's what I hope to demonstrate.
Madam Chair, could I just say that was the single briefest, except we started to wander there at the end, but that was the single briefest statement of clarity I've heard with regard to what you're planning on doing and how you're planning on doing it. You know, we're going to do what we do better. Yeah. We're not just going to put more boxes, you know, and go through some motion of reorganization. No, we're going to do what we do better. That's what I heard you say, and I appreciate that answer.
The better way, someone had said, you know, the department suffers from reorganitis. That's the medical term for what you've seen over the last 35 years.
Well, we have a prescription for that.
Well,
you have a formulary, though.
Yeah, it's formulary.
Get a little concerned about your medicine.
I have a formulary. Our fee-for-service patients do not. You should address that,
Devin. Oh, my. Society, thank you.
Moving on. And again, talking about the shared services model where you move from seven different organizational structures to one. The next cluster, Office of Finance and Policy Analysis, this cluster, within this cluster, we have our budgeting functions, and they work with each of the various program areas or program clusters to establish and develop budgets. The forecasting unit also resides in this office. They also work with the contractor for OHP actuarial services in setting the capitation rates. And we also have the Federal Financial Policy and Rate Policy Oversight, who coordinates and monitors all the various federal funding sources within the department and works in the area of federal financial policy.
Excuse me for a moment.
Ken and I are having too much fun. We're going to pause.
See, they specifically put Bates on that end and me on this end so we wouldn't get together.
And now I'm having...
Now we know where the problem is.
Yeah, there's a commonality here.
That's right. Thank you.
Some of the...
One question. Oh. How do those people communicate? How do these guys? How do the actuarialists... the federal financial policy people in a client caseload forecasting, do they meet regularly?
They meet on a regular basis,
okay.
Chair Carter. I believe it's weekly.
Okay.
And looking at some of the major program changes in the office, 2001 was when they were consolidated and we established the budget planning function for the department as a centralized function. 2004, independent policy and rate oversight function, and also in 2004, the independent program caseload forecasting function, prior to that time, the people who forecast the caseloads were in the program clusters themselves, and what we did was bring them in centrally to lend some autonomy or independence to that effort. They still have very strong links to the program people and communicate with them on a daily basis in developing their forecasts.
So, Dr. Goldberg, do you feel that the way you have forecasting set up now, and I know that Mo Better Faster is kind of a thought of yours, but do you think the way it's set up now that we can rely upon the information that we get in terms of how the policies are developed in the legislature or how the policies are sent to you?
Chair Carter, we've taken some... I'm comfortable with how this is evolving, and we're taking some additional steps. I think it was the right move to sort of take forecasting out from individual program units and to centralize it. You know, that was done in 2004. I think that we've since then are taking some steps to assure that the programs and the forecasters, although separate, communicate and have the information. And lastly, we're setting up a process whereby there'll be an external validity and reliability check through the Department of Administrative Services for the forecasting. And in the midst of all of that is a steering committee of forecasting experts, the economic forecasting folks, people from the private sector and academia, that I'm comfortable with how this is evolving. And I think we're going to continue to strive towards improving the reliability of the process. And I think we're on a good track.
Just a question on forecasting. Do you have what from 99 forward the percentage of reliability or whether or not you hit your target or not hit your target in forecasting growth plus or minus?
Chair Carter, Senator Winters, we've been asked for that at one of the previous committees last week, and we don't have that to share with you today, but we can certainly get that for you. And I believe one of our upcoming sessions is going to be devoted to forecasting, and we can certainly look at and show you both the experience as well as some comparisons to other states and ways that this is done.
Okay. The next clusters are children, adults, and families cluster. This is a cluster that contains the vocational rehabilitation services, working with disabled people to prepare them for and to help them find employment. We also have our child protective services programs in this cluster, as well as adoptions and foster care. And then the self-sufficiency programs, the temporary assistance to needy families, food stamps, the jobs program, employment-related daycare. And those are some of the services provided in this cluster. We also have our 16 service delivery areas, which is our field structure, then the mechanism for delivering these services at the local level.
So I noticed since 1993 that this department has been changed about, what, three or four times?
Well, I'd say at least two times. One major reorganization, Chair Carter, in 2001, and numerous changes to the divisional structure or programs over the years. Probably more than
two or three times. How many kids we lost in the state last year?
Chair Carter, I'm not sure what the figure is. I could bring Jim Neely from Children, Adults, and Families up if you'd like to explore that further.
Dr. Goldberg, the reason I'm asking this question is that I think a lack of continuity in this division as well have us reeling in so many ways.
because of a lack of continuity in services, mm-hmm. and also lack of communication between our partners in communities around this state, and how those connectors come to play. And when I think in Clackamas County in particular, mm-hmm. how that office worked with the police department, the police worked with the sheriff, and the sheriff worked with some of the other local people, and there was no continuity of communication or services that allow us to be where we were at that particular time. And so I would like to see how you're progressing in terms of the expectations around the field with our children, they say, because even losing one is too many.
Well, that was going to be my answer to you when you asked how many. Mm-hmm. One is too many.
Right.
And what we've got to do is look to get to that place where that's not happening.
Right. Exactly. So I'd appreciate
Madam Chair, just a question since you brought up that particular issue. Do you have somewhere you can get into this later where the external influences, because this is your agency, your department is one that has to respond to so many influences that mm-hmm. are external to the department. I recall when I was there and I did an analysis a lot of years ago, and I can't remember, it was like mm-hmm. hundreds that we had to respond to that we have no control of. I'm thinking of courts, and I'm thinking of all
the
these
government.
Other activities. Do you have somewhere that you can provide this panel and others, you know, just what those external forces are, particularly in children and adult and families, and whether it is the advocate group, whether it is the legal setting, but I do know that our staff are having to respond a lot mm-hmm. to outside pressures that are influences or services that they that the public and sometimes even some of our legislators and others don't have a clue as to what drives the agency and why sometimes things happen or not happen.
Mm-hmm. Chair Carter, Senator Winters, we can certainly provide you with some of that, both in terms of some of the groups, but you know the other external factors are also some issues such as that we're working on together,
yeah.
such as external factors such as methamphetamines, for example, which is driving right now a lot of what is happening mm-hmm. in our families and our communities and in our ability to protect our kids.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. And again, this kind of springboards off of Senator Winters' comment again, and perhaps maybe where you have in there the outside advisory groups. I know you have a myriad of them that have a lot of input into both oversight and direction. It might not hurt sometimes to show the committee kind of where these different groups input.
We have many, and we'll be happy to share them.
Great. Thank you.
And this chart is designed to show the committee, Chair Carter, is just kind of how we got to where we got to, where at one point in time we had vocational rehabilitation division and the old public welfare division. The public welfare division then, as you heard earlier, was split into children's services and adult and family services. Children's services then became services to children and families, and that takes us up to where we are today, the children, adult, and families cluster.
So, yes, I don't know if it was yesterday or Saturday, I was hearing on the news the federal government is going to send some mandates to the states in terms of putting more people to work. In particular, Doctor, what are your thoughts to that? But also, our state is not mimic the nation in terms of the number of jobs, the job growth, in order that we might take more people out of welfare, which means that the demand is up for services as opposed to being down. How will that also affect your visioning?
Senator Carter, I think that the state has been putting more people to work over the last several years, as indicated by what's happening to our unemployment rate.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's not just a function of the Department of Human Services, and you know, that's certainly a lot of other issues. I think that what we need to do as a department is to help provide people the opportunity, the services and the help they need, which will enable them to get back into the workforce. So when, you know, it's not just about how do you create jobs, but how do you get people the mental health care that they need so they can be functional in the workplace.
Right.
How can we get, you know, families some of the support that they need to be functional in the workplace? That's, I see that as our piece of this. I don't know what the federal government has in store for us. You know, we can see. I'm concerned about, you know, some of the changes that are coming down federally in terms of some decreases in support to some of our human services programs from at the federal level, and we need to see what's going to happen and where those things take us. Mm-hmm.
And I think, Senator Carter, the other issue we struggle with is not just people going back to work, but the types of jobs that they're being employed in. When we look at the wage level and the benefits that certain types of jobs offer, I think although people are employed, they still struggle to survive on a daily basis.
And I think that's the message you're going to get to the legislature, because even though you put a person to work,
yes,
if they don't have health care, you still have to have that as a part of your department. And
exactly.
And I think that that's where that information is clear and concise. And that I do know you give it to our legislative fiscal office, but sometimes I just think we need to also send a report to the Speaker and the President.
Madam Chair.
Will do.
Madam Chair, when you do your forecasting, do you include the lag time on recession or recovery? Because, you know, there's this perception of some that when you have a recession or depression and then when the economy turns and things are supposedly looking better and what have you, but there is, those of us who know, there is this lag time, particularly Oregon historically has probably had about a three-year cycle. So do you include those factors when you're doing your forecasting?
Chair Carter, Senator Winters, yes, the forecasters do, and at the next meeting they'd be certainly prepared to walk you through some of that. It's not just that lag time, it's also then some of the policies that contribute to that, because indeed I think there is a perception that the day you see an uptick in the economy is the same day you see a downtick in the need for human services, and that doesn't happen.
And then just some of the major program changes we've seen over the years in this area. 1974, the food stamp program is instituted statewide. 1985, the Citizen Review Boards, which work with Child Protective Services, are established. 1997, welfare reform, both at the state and federal level. And our old AFDC becomes the Temporary Assistance to Needy Families, or the TANF program. 1993, the Child Care Division was moved to employment. And in 2002, Child Support, which is also part of the old Adult and Family Services Division, and Children, Adult, and Families clusters moved to the Department of Justice. Moving on to our Senior and People with Disabilities cluster, up on the right hand of the org chart is the Disability Determination Services program. These people make eligibility determinations on Social Security disability claims in the state of Oregon. This is a 100% federally funded program. We have our county relations over on the left side, which deals with our AAAs and county entities that work with the developmental disability population. Housing and Community Supports deals with our state-operated community programs or the state-operated group homes where people from Fairview were placed, people with disability, developmental disabilities. They also work in the area of in-home care for children with developmental disabilities and in-home supports for seniors and children with developmental disabilities. At the bottom of the left side of the chart is our field services organization. This is the group that develops senior services that are still state delivered at the local level.
Question.
Yes.
How can we take you out, and Dr. Goldberg, this was part of your, how do we take out the contention that I feel sometimes between the 4As and in your department?
Chair Carter, you know, we're certainly making an effort to work in concert with the 4As, and I think how do you take out contention? I think like anything else, you get people around the table, you talk about the problems, you agree on a common vision, and you work towards that, and that's what we hope to do.
I don't like, and I've experienced that a lot in my life in the legislature, and I was just hoping that there was some kind of way we can form a better relationship, mm-hmm. because they're doing a valuable service in our local communities, and at the same time, if we were to have to pick those services back up, I don't think that we could possibly be as effective as we are in doing so. But I know it's a two-way street.
Yeah, I think we all need to communicate clearly and work together. So far, I think you can have them come forward and talk to you, but trying to establish the kinds of communication and relationships that will minimize contention. Mm-hmm. And certainly there'll be issues that come up which may be contentious. I think the issue is how you work through that. And mm-hmm. when problems come up, we have to just work through them, and I'm confident we can do that.
And just an aside for a minute, and Ms. Zimmerman, I was just asking them how can we work better with our field services people, and how can we take out some of the contentiousness mm-hmm. that I sometimes feel that happens between the 4As and the department. So I'm hoping that as a result of this meeting, that there could be a greater level of communication between you and the department so that we can work more collaboratively and take out some of the contentiousness that happens between us.
You know, just an observation, I think that when funding, when resources are short and need is great, mm-hmm. that often creates a climate of you know, enhanced contention, and hopefully we can work through that.
Thank you.
Just two other quick things I'd like to point out in this cluster is in licensing and quality care. It's there that we operate our abuse prevention programs for seniors, our adult protective services functions are maintained there. And we also license long-term care facilities for seniors out of that program area. And this cluster is also responsible for the administration of Eastern Oregon Training Center. So again, how we got there, on the left side you see the old Mental Health Division and the Office of Mental Retardation, which then became the Office of Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division, and the Office of Developmental Disability Services was part of the old Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division. From the Public Welfare Division, we came up with Senior Services, and then Senior and Disabled Services, which then takes us out to our current structure. And some major program changes. 1975, OPI, Oregon Project Independence, was created. In 1981, the Governor's Commission on Senior Services was established. 1981, which is a important day for the program, the home and community-based services waivers were established, which allows us to care for people in the least restrictive setting and allows them to stay in their homes for longer periods of time. 1985, the Oregon Disabilities Commission was established. In 2000, ballot measure 99 established the Home Care Commission and unionized the home care workers, and we now enter into collective bargaining with that group of providers. Also in 2000, the last resident left Fairview Training Center, which brings us up to January of 2006 and the implementation of the Medicare Modernization Act.
That is going to be a challenge for all of us.
Is going to be? Yes.
Is a challenge for all of us.
You know, my question is, right now it really is a challenge, but after all the enrollment is completed, what then are the service needs?
It appears to me the federal government doesn't give the states more money to be able to carry out what their mandate is.
Yes, that's why I thought we should keep that clawback money, but anyway. I was one of the ones to
keep it. We had this very conversation with Secretary Leavitt on Thursday.
Yep. Very good.
All right. Moving on to the health services cluster, there are three major program areas contained in that cluster: public health, the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services, and the Office of Medical Assistance Programs. Under public health, the state health officer resides there, as well as a number of different program areas. You have the Office of Multicultural Health, which works in the policy area of disparities of health treatment to populations of people with color. Disease prevention and epidemiology works to prevent and control illness and death from injury, acute and communicable diseases, sexually transmitted and environmental and occupational illnesses, and it also works to promote healthy behavior by funding screenings for cancer and in work in the area of tobacco use prevention. We also have the family health, where we have the Women, Infants, and Children Nutrition Program, the Public Health Lab, which does a number, performs a number of important functions, including your newborn screening, which we are still doing for a number of states under contract, besides the testing we do for the state of Oregon, and public health preparedness, which deals with kind of the state of public health in Oregan and works to identify issues and set policy in those areas.
But doesn't you say you do it for other states? Go back to that piece and tell me.
We do. Senator Carter, we have contracts with several states, five other states, and perform the newborn screening for them under contract. I believe Hawaii is one of them. Alaska's, I believe, and then I
wouldn't hold you to it.
It doesn't. Yeah, the other three states escaped me.
But it's actually, does the program pay for itself?
It does, Senator Carter.
Well, let me ask another question: is it a moneymaker?
I'm not sure it's a moneymaker, Senator Carter.
It creates an economy of scale for us to allow us to do it at a better price for not only the other states but for ourselves as well.
Good.
I mean that as I and it helps provide some of the overhead for the state lab.
Well, that's good.
You raised a good observation question talking about communication and working with our partners and what have you. And I just thought it would also be helpful of where particularly in a legislative session when we have, and I'm thinking now of like one of the legislation that was a favorite one of Senator Courtney's, and that was the emergency medical for children, you know, and to report back as to what really is occurring in that particular program. We had allocated some dollars for it, you know, and yet we don't get reports back on what has happened, how many children really were served and what have you, and as a result, and that might be some way of building some bridges and communicating back to us. And
Indeed.
We certainly could do that, Senator Carter. Senator Winters. Chair Carter. Excuse me.
Thank you.
And then just some of the major program changes in our the area of public health. As you've heard earlier, in 1903, the Board of Health was created. We also created then the Division of Vital Statistics, which deal with birth records, the certificates, those types of things. In 1974, we established the WIC program in Oregon. 76, the Health Division was created. In 1995, the Medical Examiner's Office, which at that point in time was in the Health Division, was moved to the State Police. In 1999, the various licensing boards that were located in the Health Division were moved to the Health Licensing Office. And also in 1999, we received a first bit of funding for the Bioterrorism Preparedness Program. Moving on to the Office of Medical Assistance Programs, this is the state Medicaid agency, primarily charged with the administration of the Medicaid program in the state of Oregon, the administration of the Oregon Health Plan, and working with providers and DHS staff to administer and run both those programs. Some major programming changes there. In 1966, Medicaid was implemented. In 1989, the Health Services Commission was formed. And, of course, in 1994, OHP was implemented. In 1998, the Children's Health Insurance Program, the CHIP program, was implemented. In 2002, the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program was added to the Oregon Health Plan. In 2003, Oregon Health Plan 2 was implemented, creating the PLUS and the standard programs. And in 2004, the standard OHP standard was closed to new enrollment.
And that's everybody went to TANF and the caseloads went up.
Correct. Yes.
I don't think we know the effects of this kind of stuff, and that's the only reason I keep highlighting that.
Mm-hmm.
That even though we closed it, it still, you know, raised its head on the other side.
I think we're all learning that now.
Yeah.
And finally, our Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services, where we have the Alcohol and Drug and Addiction Services office, as well as our services to people with mental illness. We also they also are responsible for the administration of Oregon State Hospital, as well as Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center. Partner very closely with the counties as the main provider, or we contract with the counties, and counties are the main provider of the mental health and addiction services at the local level. And a chart on how we got here: the old Mental Health Division, Office of Mental and Emotional Disturbances, became the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division, and then the Office of Mental Health Services, which takes us today where we have the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services.
Have we had the same kind of disruption and lack of continuity in, excuse me, Madam Chair, please, that you depicted for the director that we've had in the various departments? As well as, you know, staffing shifts and changes over the past few years.
Chair Carter, Senator Winters, I think as we discussed earlier, although we've only had one major reorganization over the years, the changes within the divisions, the changes of division administrators, has led to some of that instability and lack of continuity that I think have led to some of the issues that we're facing today.
Further questions on this?
And some major program changes in that area. 1883, excuse me, the founding of Oregon State Hospital. 1950s, the peak population of state hospitals. I think that includes Oregon State Hospital as well as Damish, was 5,000 individuals. 1961, the formation of the Mental Health Division. 1995, the closure of Damish. and increase in community-based services or alternatives. And from 2001 to the current day, we've been working on the integration of services for people in community settings and for people with co-occurring disorders of substance abuse and mental illness.
How has the meth issue affected us? You have not had a chance to really look at all of its costs directly or indirectly.
Chair Carter, Senator Winters, I think that sort of gets to the next piece of this. You know, the meth issue affects all of our communities and all of our programs, whether that's our foster care programs and the need for more foster homes, whether it's what's going on in the Oregon Health Plan in terms of people who lose their jobs and come on to the health plan, some of them because of meth addiction, how it affects our ability to treat people. We don't have the resources to treat everybody that needs to be treated. And you can, this goes throughout all of our programs, our senior programs. There's seniors who rely on, who have relied on family members who are meth affected and who, as a result, suffer some of the consequences. I mean, this is something that cuts through all of our program areas, and quite frankly, we don't have a good handle on exactly the impact. I think we're working on doing that. We've put together a group within the department to form a cross-functional team to look at exactly that issue and can come back and report on some of that in the future.
And Chair Carter, that takes us to our last slide, and I'm going to turn it over to Director Goldberg to go through that and then do the wrap-up.
No, I think this last slide is sort of where we've been going with the whole presentation in terms of talking about the fact that, you know, you can organize and reorganize, and you can continue to do that. The issue is really not about how you draw the boxes on the chart. It's really about the people in your organization and the way that you as an organization function around getting to a common mission and then assuring that you can carry that out.
I like Peter Drucker. Sorry, I was concentrating on that.
Yeah.
I have appreciated very much your that your preparation for this day and giving us a history of where we've been and where we are today. Both you and Mr. Psyche for your time this morning. Members, are there other questions or things that you'd like to see happen in our second meeting together on information management systems and technology, financial information processes, caseload forecasting, which is our second meeting. So if you don't have any further questions on this one, do you have questions that you'd like for them to bring back to you in the second meeting? If you don't have them today, you can either call them directly and get them to them, or just get to Rick.
I'd love to see this from Rick.
Because he can compile them. And just send you the compilation of the questions.
Sure.
For that to happen. And I know forecasting is going to be a big one, and so we might even invite other people that would like to come in on this one as well.
Sure.
The questions?
No, but I'll give mine to Rick, but just so you prepare for it, though, is the because you do direct service, you have a regulatory responsibility, and you have, you know, you do a contractual and audit responsibility. It would be helpful to have those breakouts in percentages, both as well as budget as well and staff.
Mm-hmm. I think that makes a lot of sense because you know, you're seeing that as the big bad wolf, and so it makes everybody know that
you are really a complicated department in that you're following, you have to follow through and answer to federal mandates, state mandates, local mandates, all that kind of stuff in your department, and that's important. Before we go, I want to thank you, and I will not call names. I want to say thank you to some dear friends who just thanked me for some work I did, and they sent us this big, lovely cake, and I want to ask, I want to say to you, the audience, so you can continue with whatever dialogue that you have, and hopefully John has got us a knife, and we can cut this cake, and everybody come up and enjoy it, and also here's a little coffee as well, so we want you to feel free to do that. Senator Westland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Statement and a question for Director Goldberg. Speaking of thanks, and I know this was part of your expression of well as well with this cake, but for you and all of the DHS employees, you guys do yeoman's work. It is not an easy task, made ever more difficult, not just by changing federal regulations, nature of the job, the legislature, the governor. It's a daunting task. So I thank you and all of the employees. I see Lynn's back there and, you know, a number of folks that have given years of service to trying, you know, to improve individuals' lives, to improve the lives of human beings. And for that, I don't think you ever have received the proper credit and acknowledgement. So thank you all, DHS employees. Secondly, Director, and maybe you don't want to answer this right now, and that's fine, but if there was one thing, one single thing that we as a committee or a legislature could do to help you achieve your mission, what would that be?
Well, let me take a stab at that off the top of my head. Big question, but one thing to help in the success, I think, would be for there to be some commonality with the legislative branch about the vision of where we need to go and how we need to get there, a consensus. What I've been experiencing in the last 10 weeks is the fact that everybody has, there's a lot of different opinions as to what's the most important issue, which things need to be tackled first, how to do it, what changes need to be made or not be made. And I think that what information people want, we have, I believe, 10 or 11 committees, as you mentioned when we started, providing oversight, direction, questioning, etc. To me, the single most thing would be some degree of consensus about how to move forward. I think all of us share the fact that what we do as a department is absolutely integral to what we do as state government, our ability to serve vulnerable populations, and that's an issue that I've heard all of you talk about, doesn't have boundaries of politics, of chambers, of all of that, that if we can come together and have some agree on the direction of moving forward, that would be the single most thing that would be helpful. And as I've talked, I've thought about two other things, which is, I think there needs to be more of an explicit conversation between what we do and what we don't do, what we can and what we can't do, and more explicit direction in terms of what some of the expectations are and what some of the funding is to do that. I think that there needs to be a we need to be more explicit in letting you know what it is we need to do our jobs, and you need to be more explicit in some of the direction in terms of what's expected within the resources that we get. And I think lastly, it's what we need and what we can work together on is to get the tools for success, and I'm hoping that that's what we see come forward with this committee, is a look at what do we need to be successful and some consensus about that and how we get there.
Thank you.
Okay. Further question? Again, thank you to my friends who sent us this lovely cake. And you can just come up here as soon as I gavel down and enjoy some of the cake with us. Oh, excuse me.
Next meeting.
February 28th?
There's another meeting?
February 28th, I think he said, for us to look at our calendar.
Yeah,
Chair.
We thought about that. Rick gave us the 28th, but right. Somebody sent the 24th, somebody sent the 25th.
I might have inadvertently said the 28th. It would be the 23rd, 24th. We would be in the Medford Ashland area on February 24th. I'm sorry.
If that's the
24th.
Standard, I will be there.
Yes. Okay.
You have a conflict.
There is. I have a conflict.
Okay.
My question, Madam Chair, about the 24th is if we go to Medford and it doesn't exactly fit into what our topic of discussion is that day in accordance with your plan, since we're going to go that far, is there any plan to include some testimony from the area? Well, I would always like to hear public testimony, broad public testimony.
Absolutely.
It might be also important to hear testimony from partners, providers in the area.
We will work to that end. But we have some medical facilities down in Jackson County that is greatly affected by the things that we do. And what we were trying to do was to set meetings in other communities so people will have input. And
okay.
Yes.
I just didn't want to go that far without actually having the opportunity to hear from people in that area.
We will definitely have citizen input.
Not that I don't like to hear from the director here in the state. But if all I'm going to hear from is the director in Medford.
In No, we will have that in Medford. Thank you, sir. Further discussion?
My sentiments exactly.
Are we setting a date?
The 24th.
24th. Are you away?
No, I already gave my note to Rick.
24th will work for me.
24th will work for me.
And you have an issue in this.
Yeah. Okay, Senator Woods has a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, Senator Bates had a problem today, so we're going to always miss out on somebody. Right. My apologies, and we will make sure we send you copious notes. Thank you, Senator.
And Senator, I will confirm with all the members once we hear from Senator Bates about that date.
So we haven't confirmed it with him yet?
Haven't heard back from him yet.
We have had many dates, let me say, under under consideration. But I just wanted to make sure we have the members of
the
Senate.
And
always
bring
it back to the Capitol.
When you get her to
do we have a tentative time?
Senator, this would be probably a travel day on the Thursday before and a fairly early start time Friday. Okay. To give members a chance to tie up, so we can get details out.
Thank you very much. With that, the committee is dismissed. And let me ask you to join.